You are listening to WTSQ LP 88.1 FM in Charleston, West Virginia. And today on Out of Place, we will be playing honor to Orson Welles and his rendition of the amazing radio drama War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells.
The radio play you are about to hear is a dramatization. I cannot stress this enough. The next 2 hours is a radio show simply for entertainment value. We have looked closely at the original War of the Worlds broadcast and have followed the script as closely as possible. In 1938, the radio drama anthology, The Mercury Theater on the Air, broadcasted War of the Worlds. The novel by H.G. Wells was adapted, directed, and narrated by actor and future filmmaker Orson Welles. When it was originally broadcast, the landing of the Martians were covered by radio and the techniques used at the time. The reporters and broadcast of 1938 could not imagine the ability of communication involved today. Radio in 1938 had a strange charisma that if a radio personality said it, it was true. The same could be said for newspapers, the only real news-related communication at the time. Today, the invention of social media and the ability to communicate anything, anywhere, at any time, has added a new dimension to this story that no one who listened to the original broadcast could imagine. The original broadcast opened with Orson Welles reading the prologue, which was based on the opening of H.G. Wells' novel, but modified to a place in the story's setting in 1939. That holds true for this newly modified show and will take place somewhere within the Mountain State. Like the recreation of the New York show in 1971, there will be multiple breaks to remind the listeners this is a dramatization. We will also break multiple times to thank our underwriters and, as always, appreciate them and our sustaining members, who without them, we would not be able to continue on the air. If you have a business or an event coming up and want more info on becoming an underwriter, you can always email us at info@wtsq.org. Or if you are a listener, you can always visit our website at wtsq.org and click the donate link. Now, without further ado, we bring you War of the Worlds, adapted for the year 2019.
We now know that in the early years of the 20th century, this world was being watched closely by intelligences greater than man's, and yet as mortal as his own. We now know that as human beings busy themselves about their various concerns, they are scrutinized and studied, perhaps almost as narrowly as a man with a microscope might scrutinize the transient creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space. Yet, across an immense ethereal gulf, minds that to our minds, as ours are to the beasts in the jungle, intellects vast, cool, and unsympathetic, regarded this earth with envious eyes and slowly and surely drew their plans against us. In the 39th year of the 20th century came the Great Disillusionment. It was near the end of October. Business was better. The war scare was over. More men were back at work. Sales were picking up. On this particular evening, October 30th, the Crosley Service estimated that 32 million people were listening in on radios.
Shut up and sit down.
WTSQ LP 88.1 FM in downtown Charleston. Good afternoon. It is 3 o'clock, which means it is time for Out of Place, and I am your host, Carrie. It is a beautiful Saturday afternoon, and we welcome all of you to the show. We hope you stick around and listen to some music for the next 2 hours. But let's go ahead and get started with one of my favorite songs and a song that is played here often on Out of Place. Here is REM with End of the World.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes and air. foreign tar, slash and burn, return, listen to yourself churn. Locking in, uniform and book burning, blood letting, every motive escalate, automotive centering. Light a candle, light a motor, step down, watching heel crush, crush, uh-oh, this means no fear. Cavalier, renegade, steering clear, a tournament of lies. Offer me solutions, offer me alternatives, and I decline.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
Lester Banks, birthday party, cheesecake, jelly bean, boom, you symbiotic, patriotic, slam, button, nap, right?
WTSQ, and in that block of songs, you heard REM with End of the World, followed by The Police with Walking on the Moon, and The Killers with their song Spaceman. I am very happy to have an old friend visiting us here at the station, Mr. Lester Colt. How have you been, Lester? We haven't really heard from you since, well, that unfortunate incident on April 1st.
Well, hello to you. It has been a while, and that is something I would like to never revisit again, ever. I do feel, to coin a phrase, it was a bit over the top with that protective covering to the Capitol Dome, and I am glad to say that they have now totally redesigned the Whirly Bird toilet, and in my defense, the door said restroom. I thought that lever was going to recline.
Yeah, that's great, Lester. Well, we're happy to have you back here with us, and I'm sure that you will enjoy being back here delivering the news to us. Speaking of that, do you have any news for today?
Well, this may explain some of the weird weather we've had. Green Bottom Observatory reported there was a slight atmospheric disturbance of undetermined origin reported over Nova Scotia, causing a low pressure area to move rather rapidly over the northeastern states. It will affect the weather here for the next few days, bringing rain accompanied by light gale force winds, my favorite kind. My wife's name's Gail. Hi, Gail. Also, did you see the news story on CNN about what life will be like on Mars when they have the first manned mission in 2030? I hope we don't have to deal with any of those weird atmospheric disturbances when we all live in our little space bubbles.
I'm sure science will be able to handle it by then, Lester. Let's go ahead and get back into some music, though. How about some Muse with Supermassive Black Hole?
We'll be right back.
WTSQ, The Status Quo. And if you were just tuning in, my name is Carrie and this is Out of Place and I am joined here by Lester. But I did just get some interesting news, somewhat related to the news you just gave us, Lester. But it was tweeted to me by President Chris Long. At 20 minutes before 8 Eastern time this morning, Professor J.P. Kubisch of the Green Bottom Observatory reported observing several explosions of incandescent gas occurring at regular intervals on the planet Mars. The spectroscope indicates that the gas to be hydrogen and moving towards the Earth enormous velocity. Professor Richard Duck of the observatory at Princeton confirms Kubisch's observation and describes the phenomenon as, quote, like a jet blue flame shot from a gun. Now, there have been a few images released, which I will add, plus the story and the photos to the Out of Place Facebook page. If you aren't already a fan, go ahead and search for Out of Place on WTSQ on Facebook and go ahead and add us. It's where I post all of my playlists and all that kind of fun stuff. But yeah, the pictures look pretty cool. They might make some cool wallpapers for your phone. But that does kind of put me in the mood for some alien related tunes. So let's get started with one of my personal favorites. Here is the theme to Space Jam.
Everybody get up, it's time to slam now. We got the real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam. Space Jam. Here's your chance, do your dance at the Space Jam. Alright.
I hate to jump in mid-song. I know that's not really normal for this show, but our amazing president and leader of the station, Mr. Chris Long, has pulled some strings and actually got us an interview with Professor J.P. Kubisch of the Green Bottom Observatory. He will be on shortly to give us detailed observation of what he saw that night. Professor Kubisch, can you hear me okay? Yes, thank you, Professor, and to our President Chris Long for reaching out to you. I do have to ask anyone listening to be patient during the phone call. There may be a delay during our interview. This is live radio, after all, and the professor is very busy, and he may be interrupted by telephone, text, or other forms of communication.
Yes, thank you. I am in touch with several other groups via Skype across the world. This is big news for West Virginia. A discovery like this could change our whole understanding of the universe.
May I begin to ask some questions, Professor?
At any time.
Would you tell us what you observed on the planet Mars through your telescope?
Though nothing unusual at the moment, a red disk swimming in a blue sea. Transverse stripes across the disk. Quite distinct now, because Mars happens to be the point nearest the Earth in opposition, as we call it.
Well, in your opinion, do these transverse stripes mean anything?
Not canals, I can assure you. Although that's the popular conjecture of those who imagine Mars to be inhabited. No. From a scientific viewpoint, the stripes are really the result of atmospheric conditions peculiar to the planet.
Then you're quite convinced that living intelligence as we know it does not exist on Mars.
I'd say the chances against it are 1,000 to 1.
What about those eruptions occurring on the planet so frequently?
I cannot account for that.
So, Professor, just how far is Mars from Earth?
Approximately 40 million miles.
That's pretty far away. I'm just a reporter, but I'd say we're safe.
Well, thank you, Professor. That was very informative. We really appreciate you calling in to the station, and we'll leave you. We know you're really busy.
Yes, I must touch base with another station there in the area. Do you think you could patch me through to Rock 10?
Thank you. Sorry. sorry, Lester. Just, Lester, do you have new information for us?
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is quite interesting. About a half an hour ago, a seismograph doohickey registered a shock of almost earthquake intensity, occurring within a radius of 20 miles of Greenbottom, in a town called Red Hawk. It's believed to be a meteorite of unusual size and proportion.
That's crazy. I hope everyone in Red Hawk is okay.
My second cousin's ex-wife lives there. She'll be fine. Hey, Darlene.
Okay, let's go ahead and get back into some music, I guess. We're going to go ahead and listen to Mr. David Bowie.
Didn't know what time it was, the lights were low, oh, oh. I leaned back on my radio, oh, oh. Some cat was laying down some rock and roll, that is all he said. Then the loud sound that seemed to fade came back like a slow voice on a wave of fade. That weren't no DJ, that was hazy. There's a starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a starman waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children lose it. Let the children use it. Let all the children do get.
David Bowie with Life on Mars. It seems appropriate with the amount of news that we're getting into the station here. But I received a text from my friend Cynthia. She's an avid listener of the station, and she works for the local news station, and she just texted me about the Mars story.
This is kind of giving me the heebie-jeebies. Aren't you concerned about little green men?
I'm sure we're safe up here in the Union Building in Charleston, Lester. What would any extraterrestrials want with people in West Virginia?
Maybe they heard about our pepperoni rolls.
Well,
or Tudors.
I can't argue that. Okay, Cynthia just sent me some more information. She says that a bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News in Toronto, Canada, with Professor Morris of McGill University, reports observing a total of 3 explosions on the planet Mars between the hours of 7:45 a.m. and 9:20 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. This confirms earlier reports received from the American observatories.
Oh my. My cousin's half-brother's best friend just messaged me. He works in Elizabeth at the newspaper there. He says, I want to set the mood.
Here's a special report from Watershed, West Virginia. It is reported that at 2:21 p.m., a huge flaming object, believed to be a meteorite, fell on a farm in the neighborhood of Red Hawk, West Virginia, 22 miles from Princeton. The flash in the sky was visible within a radius of several hundred miles, and the noise of the impact was heard as far north as Elizabeth.
Lester, is something wrong?
Oh, that was Chris. He's preparing the whirly bird. I guess he wants a report from up there.
Maybe stop by the restroom here at the station before you leave. Call us when you get there. Well, let's wait until Lester gets there. May I suggest, if you are driving a convertible in the direct Charleston area, to maybe pull over and put the top up, and we're going to go ahead and get back into some music.
Made it here in one piece. So many people and reporters, I hardly know where to begin. I'm going to attempt to paint you a word picture of the strange scene before my eyes, like something out of a modern-day Arabian Nights. I guess this thing directly in front of me, half buried in a massive crater, must have struck with terrific force. The ground is covered in splinters of trees and homes, and I think that's what's left of an outhouse. It must have struck on its way down what I can see of the object itself. Oh, I hope no one was in there. That's a terrible mess, just terrible. It doesn't look very much like a meteor, at least not the meteors I've seen. It looks more like a huge cylinder. It has a diameter about 30 yards. The metal on this thing, well, I've never seen anything like it, apart from maybe the Steely Dan. The color's sort of greenish-white. Oh, curious spectators are now pressing close to the object, despite the efforts of the police to keep them back. They're getting in front of my line of vision. Would you mind standing to one side, please? While the police officers are pushing the crowd back, here's Mr. Barkers, owner of the farm here. He may have some interesting facts to add. Mr. Barkers, would you please tell the WTSQ's listeners as much as you remember of this rather unusual Halloween decoration that dropped in your backyard?
Yeah, in your backyard. Backyard.
Step closer, please.
Well, I was listening to the radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mr. Barkers.
Pardon me?
Closer and louder, please.
Yes, sir.
While I was listening to the radio and kind of drowsing, that professor fellow was talking about Mars. So I was half dozing and half... Can you hear me now?
Louder, please, and closer.
As I was saying, I was listening to the radio kind of halfways.
Yes, Mr. Barkers, and then you saw something?
Nah, not first off. I heard something.
And what did you hear?
A hissing sound, like this. Kind of like 4th of July rocket.
Then what?
Turned my head out the window and would have swore I was to sleep and dreaming. I seen kind of a greenish streak, and then zingo! Something smacked the ground, knocked me clear out of my chair.
That sounds absolutely horrifying. Were you frightened, Mr. Barkers?
Well, I ain't quite sure. I reckon I was kind of riled.
Thank you, Mr. Barkers. Thank you.
You want me to tell you some more?
No, no, that's quite all right. That's plenty. Carrie, can you still hear me at the station?
Yeah, you're still coming in. What's it like over there? Can you post a photo to the Out of Place Facebook page? Or can you do a Facebook Live?
Well, I can try to. There isn't much of a date signal here. It's like some weird interference. I'm only able to talk to you via my Whirlybird phone.
Well, while you're trying, let's go ahead and hear from some more of our underwriters. Support for WTSQ is brought to you by the Charleston Music and Arts Collective, a nonprofit organization supporting regional artists and musicians through collaboration, promotions, and education. More information available at cmacbakery@gmail.com or cmacwv on Facebook.
Support for WTSQ is provided by Montani Mechanical Group, plumbing, heating, cooling, refrigeration, and electrical services. More information regarding everything they offer is available at montanimg.com and by calling 304-410-0239.
Support for WTSQ is brought to you by the West Virginia International Film Festival, supporting and promoting the film arts since 1985, screening independent, international, and local films year-round at the Floralee Hark Cohen Cinema. Information and membership at wviff.org.
I wish I could convey the atmosphere, the background of this fantastical scene. Hundreds of cars are parked in a field behind us. Police are trying to rope off the roadway leading to the farm, but it's no use. They're breaking right through. Some of the more daring souls are now venturing near the edge. Their silhouettes stand out against the metal sheen. Oof. One man wants to touch the thing. He's having an argument with a policeman and... Policeman wins! There's something I haven't mentioned in all this excitement, but now it's becoming more distinct. Perhaps you've caught it already on your radios. Do you hear it? It's a weird humming sound that seems to be coming from inside the thing. I'll move the microphone a little nearer. Gail, honey, can you hear it? Sounds like our little Steely Dan. Now, we're not more than 25 feet away. Word around here is it's some kind of meteorite. To this reporter's eyes, it doesn't look like a rock. It's shiny and made of metal I've never seen on this Earth. Some kind of friction with the Earth's atmosphere, I thought it usually tears holes in a meteorite. This thing's smooth as a baby's bottom. And as you can see, it's a cylindrical shape. Just a minute, something's happened. The top's beginning to rotate like a screw. This thing must be hollow.
She's moving. Look, the darn thing's unscrewing. Keep back there. Keep back, I tell you. Maybe there's men in it trying to escape. It's red hot. They'll burn to a cinder. Keep back there. Keep those idiots back. She's off. The top's loose. Look out there. Stand back.
This is the most terrifying thing I've ever witnessed. Wait a minute. Somebody's crawling out of the center of this disc-like sphere. Wait a minute. Somebody's crawling out of the center top of this disc-like sphere. Something I can see peering out of the black hole, two luminous like discs. Are the eyes? It might be a face. It might be... Oh, gracious.
Something's wiggling out of the shadow like a gray snake. Yeah, it's another one, and another. They look like tentacles to me. There, I can see the thing's body. It's large, large as a bear. Ooh, it looks like wet leather. But the face, it's indescribable. I can hardly force myself to keep looking at it. The eyes are black and gleam like a serpent. The mouth is V-shaped with saliva dripping from rimless lips that seem to quiver and pulsate. The monster of whatever it is can hardly move. It seems weighed down by possibly gravity or, I don't know, maybe gravy. It's raising up. The crowd falls back now. They've seen plenty. This is the most extraordinary experience. I can't find words. I'm going to pull this microphone cord with me as I talk. I'll have to stop the description until I can take a new position. Hold on, will you please? I'll be back in just a minute. Yes, yes. Am I on? Here I am, back of a stone wall that adjoins Mr. Barkin's garden. From here, I get a sweep of the whole scene. I'll give you every detail as long as I can talk. As long as I can see. More state police have arrived. They're drawing up a cordon in front of the pit. About 30 of them. No need to push the crowd back now. They're willing to keep their distance. Captain is confirming something. We can't quite see who it is. Oh, yes, I believe it's Professor Cubish. Yes, it is. Now they've parted. The professor moves around one side, studying the object, while the captain and two policemen advance with something in their hands. I can see it now. It's a white handkerchief tied to a pole, a flag of truce, just like General E. Lee flew. If those creatures know what that means, what anything means, wait! Something's happening. A hump shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against the back mirror. What's that? There's a laser flame lasering from some kind of mirror. And whoosh! It leaps right at the advancing men. It strikes them head on. Oh, the humanity! Good Lord, they're turning into flame. Now the whole field's caught fire. The woods, the barns, the gas tanks of automobiles, it's spreading everywhere. It's coming this way, about 20 yards to my right. Not my whirly bird. Not the whirly bird. Oh, Chris is going to be so mad.
Lester? Well, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast from Red Hawk. Evidently, there's some difficulty with our field transmission. We'll get back there as soon as we can. I do have some new information about the Mars story we were discussing earlier. I did some searching on Google, and it shows about an hour ago, there was a story from San Diego, California. Professor Freely, speaking at a dinner at the California Astronomical Society, expressed the opinion that the explosions on Mars are undoubtedly nothing more than a severe volcanic disturbance on the surface of the planet. So I'm sure there isn't anything to worry about or to get worried about, but it was exciting while it lasted, right? Let's go ahead and listen to some more music.
To me as I'm floating in a lifeboat.
status quo. You were listening to Out of Place, and I'm your host, Carrie, and I have just been handed a message from Red Hawk via Snapchat from our own Chris Long just a moment ago. At least 40 people, including 6 troopers, lie dead in a field east of the village of Red Hawk, their bodies burned and distorted beyond all possible recognition. Here is an audio clip directly pulled from the snap that was sent from Brigadier General Montgomery Montgomery Smith, commander of the state militia in Charleston, West Virginia.
I've been requested by the governor of West Virginia to place the counties of Clark and Jackfield as far west as Whitman and east to Heimlich under martial law. No one will be permitted to enter this area except by special pass issued by state or military authorities. 4 companies of state militia are proceeding from Charleston, West Virginia, and will aid in the evacuation of homes within the range of military operations. Thank you.
You have been listening to General Montgomery Montgomery Smith commanding the state militia here in Charleston. In the meantime, further details of the catastrophe at Red Hawk are coming in. The strange creatures, after unleashing their deadly assaults, crawled back into the pit and made no attempt to prevent the efforts of the firemen to recover the bodies and extinguish the fire. Combined fire departments from Heimlich County, Virginia, are fighting the flames, which are menacing the entire countryside. We have not been able to contact Lester with our mobile unit at Red Hawk, but we do hope to be able to return you there at the earliest possible moment. In the meantime, just a moment. I've just been informed that we have established communication with an eyewitness of the tragedy. Professor Kubish has been located at a farmhouse near Red Hawk, where he has established an emergency observation post. As a scientist, he will give you an explanation of the calamity. Professor Kubish, can you hear me?
Of the creatures in the rocket cylinder at Red Hawk, I can give no authoritative information, either as to their nature, their origin, or their purposes here on Earth. Of their destructive instrument, I might venture some conjectural explanation. For want of a better term, I shall refer to this mysterious weapon as a heat ray. It's all too evident that these creatures have scientific knowledge far in advance of our own. It is my guess that in some way they are able to generate an intense heat in a chamber of practically absolute non-conductivity. This intense heat they project in a parallel beam against any object they choose by means of a polished parabolic mirror of unknown composition, much as the mirror of a lighthouse projects a beam of light. That conjecture on the origin...
We seem to have lost the connection to Professor Kubish. Hopefully he is okay and everyone there is all right. We did receive a message from Washington, D.C., and the Office of the Director of the National Red Cross reports 10 units of Red Cross emergency workers have been assigned to the headquarters of the state militia stationed outside of Red Hawk, West Virginia. Here's a bulletin from state police. The fires at Red Hawk are now under control. Scouts report all quiet in the pit, no sign of life appearing from the mouth of the cylinder. With that bit of good news, let's go ahead and get back into some music. And, I'll keep you posted.
We'll be right back.
WTSQ, The Status Quo, you're listening to Out of Place, and my name is Carrie. We just received a connection to the field headquarters of the state militia near Red Hawk. Let's go ahead and see if we can connect in with them.
This is Captain Ricky Vinson of the Signal Corps, attached to the state militia, now engaged in military operations in the vicinity of Red Hawk. Situation arising from the reported presence of certain individuals of unidentified nature is now under complete control. The cylindrical object, which lies in a pit directly below our position, is surrounded on all sides by 8 battalions of infantry, without heavy field pieces, but adequately armed with rifles and machine guns. All calls for alarm, if such calls ever existed, is now entirely unjustified. The things, whatever they are, do not even venture to poke their heads above the pit. I can see their hiding place plainly in the glare of the searchlights here. With all of their reported resources, these creatures can scarcely stand up against heavy machine gun fire. Anyway, it's an interesting outing for the troops. I can make out their khaki uniforms crossing back and forth in front of the lights. It looks almost like a real war. There appears to be some slight smoke in the woods bordering the Millstone River. Probably fire started by campers. Well, we ought to see some action soon. One of the companies is deploying on the left flank. A quick thrust and it will all be over. Now wait a minute, I see something on top of the cylinder. No, it's nothing but a shadow. Now the troops are on the edge of the Red Hawk farm. 7,000 armed men closing in on an old metal tube. Wait, that wasn't a shadow. It's something moving. Solid metal, kind of a shield-like affair rising up out of the cylinder. It's going higher and higher. Why, it's standing on legs. Actually rearing up on a sort of metal framework. Now it's reaching above the trees and the searchlights are on it. Hold on!
I am so sorry to report, as incredible as it may seem, that those strange beings who landed are from the planet Mars. The battle which took place at Red Hawk has ended in one of the most startling defeats ever suffered by any army in modern times. 7,000 men, armed with rifles and machine guns, pitted against the single fighting machine of the invaders from Mars, 120 known survivors. The rest strewn over the battlefield area of Red Hawk to Elizabeth, crushed and trampled to death under the metal feet of the monster, or burned to cinder by its heat rays. The monster is now in control of the middle section of West Virginia and has effectively cut the state through its center. Communication lines are down from Ohio to the Atlantic Ocean, railroad tracks are torn, and service from West Virginia to DC are disconnected, except routing some of the trains through Allentown and Phoenixville. Highway to the north and south of the west are clogged with frantic human traffic. By morning, the fugitives will have swelled Columbus, Parkersburg, and Weston. It is estimated to twice their normal population. At this time, martial law prevails throughout West Virginia and eastern Ohio. We take you now to Washington for a special bulletin.
Citizens of the nation, I shall not try to conceal the gravity of the situation that confronts the country, nor the concern of your government in protecting the lives and property of its people. However, I wish to impress upon you, private citizens and public officials, all of you, the urgent need of calm and resourceful action. We are informed the central portion of West Virginia is blacked out from radio communication due to the effect of the heat ray upon power lines and electrical equipment. Here is a special bulletin from New York. Cables received from English, French, German scientific bodies offering assistance. Astronomers report continued gas outbursts at regular intervals on planet Mars. Majority voice opinion that enemy will be reinforced by additional rocket machines. Attempts made to locate Professor Kubisch of Princeton, who has observed Martians at close range. It is feared he was lost in recent battle. Langham Field, Virginia. Scouting planes report 3 Martian machines visible above treetops, moving north towards Somersville with population fleeing ahead of them. Heat ray not in use. Although advancing at express train speed, invaders pick their way carefully. They seem to be making conscious effort to avoid destruction of cities and countryside. However, they stop to uproot power lines, bridges, and railroad tracks. Their apparent objective is to crush resistance, paralyze communication, and disorganize human society. Fortunately, This formidable enemy is still confined to a comparatively small area, and we may place our faith in the military forces to keep them there. In the meantime, placing our faith in God, we must continue the performance of our duties, each and every one of us, so that we may confront this destructive adversary with a nation united, courageous and consecrated to the preservation of human supremacy on this earth. I thank you.
As a reminder, you are listening to WTSQ, The Status Quo, and this is a dramatization of H.G. Wells' version of War of the Worlds. Here's a bulletin from Basking Ridge, West Virginia. Hunters have stumbled on a second cylinder similar to the first embedded in the Great Swamp, 20 miles south of Morristown. Army field pieces are proceeding from Charleston to blow up the second invading unit before the cylinder can be opened and the fighting machine rigged. They are taking up position in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. Another bulletin from Langham Field, Virginia. Scouting planes report enemy machines, now three in number, increasing speed northward, kicking over houses and trees in their evident haste to form a conjunction with their allies south of Morristown. Machines also sighted by telephone operator east of Middlesex within 10 miles of Plainfield. Here's a bulletin from Weston Field. Fleet of Army bombers carrying heavy explosives flying north in pursuit of enemy. Scouting planes act as guides. They keep speeding enemy in sight. Just a second. It looks like we have been able to connect to one of the artillery lines adjacent to that city to give you a direct report in the zoning advancing enemy. First, let's take you to the battery of the 22nd Field Artillery located in the Appalachian Mountains.
Range, 32 meters.
32 meters.
Projection, 39 degrees.
39 degrees.
Fire.
140 yards to the right, sir.
Shift range, 31 meters.
31 meters.
Projection, 37 degrees.
37 degrees.
Fire.
Bombing plane V-843 off Basking Ridge, West Virginia. Lieutenant Voigt, commanding 8 bombers. Reporting to Commander Fairfax, Langham Field. This is Voigt, reporting to Commander Fairfax, Langham Field. Enemy tripod machines now in sight, reinforced by 3 machines from the Morristown cylinder. 6 altogether. 1 machine already crippled. Believed hit by shell from Army gun in Appalachian Mountains. Guns now appear silent. A heavy black fog hanging close to the earth, of extreme density, nature unknown. No sign of heat ray. Enemy now turns east, crossing Ohio River into the Pendle Marshes. Another straddles the Pulaski Skyway. Evident objective is New York City. They're pushing down a high-tension power station. The machines are close together now, and we're ready to attack. Planes circling, ready to strike. 1,000 yards and we'll be over the first. 800 yards, 600, 400, 200. There they go, the giant arm raised. Green flash, they're spraying us with flame. 2,000 feet, engines are giving out. No chance to release bombs, only one thing left. Drop on them, plane and all. We're diving on the first one. Now the engine's gone. Eight.
This is Basking Ridge, West Virginia, calling Langham Field. This is Basking Ridge, West Virginia, calling Langham Field. Come in, please.
This is Langham Field. Go ahead.
Eight Army bombers in engagement with enemy tripod machines over West Virginia. Engines incapacitated by heat ray, all crashed. One enemy machine destroyed. Enemy now discharging heavy black smoke in direction of...
This is Charleston, West Virginia. This is Charleston, West Virginia. Warning, poisonous black smoke pouring in from Pendle Marshes. Reaches South Street. Gas masks, useless. Urge population to move into open spaces. Automobiles, use route 7, 23, 24. Avoid congested areas. Smoke now spreading over Raymond Boulevard.
2X2L, calling CQ. 2X2L, calling CQ. 2X2L, calling CQ. New York, isn't there anyone on the air? Isn't there anyone on the air? Isn't there anyone? 2X2L.
I'm speaking from the roof of the broadcasting building, New York City. The bells you hear are ringing to warn the people to evacuate the city as the Martians approach. Estimated in the last 2 hours, 3 million people have moved out along the roads to the north. Hutchinson River Parkway still kept open for motor traffic. Avoid bridges to Long Island. Hopelessly jammed. All cell towers are down. No more defenses. Our army wiped out. Artillery, Air Force, everything wiped out. This may be the last broadcast. We'll stay here to the end. People are holding service below us in the cathedral. Now I look down the harbor, all manner of boats overloaded with fleeing population pulling out from docks. Streets are all jammed, noise and crowds like New Year's Eve in the city. Wait a minute. Enemy now in sight above the Palisades. Five great machines. First one is crossing river. I can see it from here, wading the Hudson like a man wading through a brook. A bulletin's handed to me. Martian cylinders are falling all over the country. One outside Buffalo, one in Chicago, St. Louis. Seem to be timed in space. Now the first machine reaches the shore. He stands watching, looking over the city. His steel, cowlish head is even with the skyscrapers. He waits for the others. They rise like a line of new towers on the city's west side. Now they're lifting their metal hands. This is the end now. Smoke comes out. Black smoke drifting over the city. People in the streets see it now. They're running toward the East River, thousands of them dropping in like rats. Now the smoke's spreading faster. It's reached Times Square. People trying to run away from it, but it's no use. They're falling like flies. Now the smoke's crossing 6th Avenue, 5th Avenue, 100 yards away. It's 50 feet.
How's reception? How's reception? Kay, please. Where are you? 8 X-ray. 3 Roger, what's the matter? Where are you? 2 X-ray, 2 Lima, calling Charlie, Quebec. 2 X-ray, 2 Lima. Repeat, calling Charlie, Quebec. 2 X-ray, 2 Lima, calling. 8 X-ray, 3 Roger, come in, please.
You are listening to WTSQ's presentation of a modern dramatization of The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells. This is WTSQ LP 88.1 FM in downtown Charleston, the status quo.
As I set down these notes on paper, I'm obsessed by the thought that I may be the last living man on Earth. I've been hiding in this empty house near Red Hawk, a small island of daylight cut off by the black smoke from the rest of the world. All that happened before the arrival of these monstrous creatures in the world now seems part of another life, a life that has no continuity with the present. Furtive existence of the lonely derelict who pencils these words on the back of some astronomical notes bearing the signature of J.P. Cubish.
I look down at my blackened hands, my torn shoes, my tattered clothes, and I try to connect with a professor who lives at Princeton and who on the night of October 25th glimpsed through his telescope an orange splash of light on a distant planet. My wife, my colleagues, my students, my books, my observatory, my world. Where are they now? Did they ever exist? Am I John Cubish? What day is it? Do days exist without calendars? Does time pass when there are no human hands left to wind clocks? In writing down my daily life, I tell myself, I shall preserve human history between the dark covers of this little book that was meant to record the movements of the stars. But to write, I must live, and to live, I must eat. I find moldy bread in the kitchen and an orange not too spoiled to swallow. I keep watching at the window. From time to time, I catch a sight of a Martian above the black smoke. The smoke still holds the house in its black coil, but at length there is a hissing sound, and suddenly I see a Martian mounted on his machine, spraying the air with a jet of steam as if to dissipate the smoke. I watch in a corner as his huge metal legs nearly brush against the house. Exhausted by terror, I fall asleep. It's morning. Morning. Sun streams in the window, the black cloud or gas has lifted, and the scorched meadows to the north look as though a black snowstorm has passed over them. I venture from the house. I make my way to the road, no traffic. Here and there, a wrecked car, baggage overturned, a blackened skeleton. I push on north. For some reason, I feel safer trailing these monsters than running away from them. And I keep a careful watch. I've seen the monsters feed. Should one of their machines appear over the top of trees, I'm ready to fling myself flat on the earth. I come to a chestnut tree. October chestnuts are ripe. I fill my pockets. I must keep alive. 2 days I wander in a vague northerly direction through a desolate world. Finally, I notice a living creature, a small red squirrel in a beech tree. I stare at him and wonder. He stares back at me, and I believe at this moment the animal and I share the same emotion, the joy of finding another living being. I push on north. I find dead cows in a brackish field. Beyond, the charred ruins of a dairy. The silo remains standing over the wasteland like a lighthouse deserted by the sea. Astride the silo perches a weathercock. The arrow points north. Next day I came to a city vaguely familiar in its contours, yet its buildings strangely dwarfed and leveled off, as if a giant hand sliced off its highest towers with a capricious sweep of his hand. I reached the outskirts. I found Charleston undemolished, but humbled by some whim of the advancing Martians. Presently, with an odd feeling of being watched, I caught sight of something crouching in a doorway. I made a step toward it, and it rose and became a man. A man armed with a large knife. Stop. Where did you come from?
I come from many places. A long time ago from Princeton.
Princeton, huh? That's near Red Hawk?
Yeah.
Red Hawk. There's no food here. This is my country. All this end of town, down to the river. There's only food for one. Which way are you going?
I don't know. I guess I'm looking for people.
What was that? Did you hear something just then?
Only a bird. A live bird.
You get to know that birds have shadows these days. Say, we're in the open here. Let's crawl into this doorway and talk.
Have you seen any Martians?
Nah, they've come over to New York. At night, the sky's alive with their lights, just as if people were still living in it. By daylight, you can't see them. 5 days ago, a couple of them carried something big across the flats from the airport. I believe they're learning how to fly.
Fly?
Then it's all over with humanity. Stranger, there's still you and I. Two of us left.
They got themselves in solid. They wrecked the greatest country in the world. Those green stars, they're probably falling somewhere every night. They've only lost one machine. There isn't anything to do. We're done. Where were you? You're in a uniform?
Yeah, what's left of it. I was in the militia, National Guard. That's good. wasn't any war anymore, and then there's war between men and ants. And we're eatable ants. What will they do with us?
I've thought it all out. Right now we're caught as we're wanted. The Martian only has to go a few miles to get a crowd on the run, but they won't keep doing that. They'll begin catching us systematic-like, keeping the best in stores and cages and things. They haven't begun on us yet.
Not begun?
Not begun. All that's happened so far is because we don't have sense enough to keep quiet, bothering them with guns and such stuff, and losing our heads and rushing off in crowds. Now, instead of all rushing around blind, we've got to fix ourselves up. Fix ourselves up according to the way things are now. Cities, nations, civilization, progress, done.
But if that's so, what is there to live for?
Well, there won't be any more concerts for a million years or so, and no nice little dinners at restaurants if it's amusement you're after. I guess the game's up.
And then what is there left?
Life. That's what. I want to live, yeah. And so do you. We're not going to be exterminated, and I don't mean to be caught either, and tamed and fattened and bred like an ox.
What are you going to do?
I'm going on. Right under their feet. I got a plan. We men as men are finished. We don't know enough. We got to learn plenty before we got a chance. And we've got to live and keep free while we learn, see? I've thought it all out, see?
Tell me the rest.
Well, it isn't all of us that were made for wild beasts, and that's what it's got to be. That's why I watched you. All these little office workers that used to live in these houses, they're no good. They haven't any stuff to them. They just used to run off to work. I've seen hundreds of them running wild to catch their commuter train in the morning, running back at night afraid they won't be in time for dinner, lives insured and a little invested in case of accidents, and on Sundays worried about the hereafter. The Martians will be a godsend for those guys. Nice, roomy cages, good food, careful breeding, no worries. After a week or so chasing about the fields on empty stomachs, they'll come and be glad to be caught.
You've thought it all out, have you?
And that isn't all. These Martians will make pets of some of them, train them to do tricks. Who knows? Get sentimental over the pet boy who grew up and had to be killed. And some, maybe they'll train to hunt us.
No, that's impossible. No human being.
Yes, they will. There's men who'll do it gladly. If one of them ever comes after me, why?
In the meantime, you and I and others like us, where are we to live when the Martians own the Earth?
I've got that all figured out. We'll live underground. I've been thinking about the sewers. Under New York are miles and miles of them. The main ones are big enough for anybody. Then there's cellars, vaults, underground storerooms, railway tunnels, subways. You begin to see, eh? And we'll get a bunch of strong men together, not weak ones. That rubbish.
And you meant me to go?
Well, I gave you a chance, didn't I?
We won't quarrel about that. Go on.
We've got to make safe spaces for us to stay in, see? And get all the books we can. Science books. That's where men like you come in, see? We'll raid the museums. We'll even spy on the Martians. It may not be so much that we've had to learn before. Just imagine this. Four or five of their own fighting machines suddenly start off. Heat rays right and left, and not a Martian in them. Not a Martian in them, but men! Men who have learned the way how. It may even be in our time. Gee, imagine one of them lovely things with its heat ray wide and free. We turn it on the Martians. We turn it on men. We'd bring everybody down to the knees.
That's your plan?
You and me, and a few more of us, we'd own the world.
I see.
Say, what's the matter? Where are you going?
Not your world. Goodbye, stranger. After parting with the soldier, I came to the Holland Tunnel. I entered that silent tube, anxious to know the fate of the great city on the other side of the Hudson. Cautiously, I came out of the tunnel and made my way up Canal Street. I reached 14th Street, and there again, the black powder and several bodies and an ominous smell from the gratings of the cellars of some of the houses. I wandered up through the 30s and 40s. I stood alone on Times Square. I caught sight of a lean dog running down 7th Avenue with a piece of dark brown meat in his jaws, and a pack of starving mongrels at his heels. He made a wide circle around me as though he feared I might prove a fresh competitor. I walked up Broadway in the direction of that strange powder, past theater windows and displays of the last showings, past the Capitol Theater, silent and dark, past a double-decker bus with ads for the Game of Thrones on the side. A true winter has come. I continued my walk near Columbus Circle when I noticed models of 2020 motor cars in their showrooms facing empty streets. From over the top of the General Motors building, I watched a flock of black birds circling in the sky. I hurried on. Suddenly, I caught sight of the hood of a Martian machine standing somewhere in Central Park, gleaming in the late afternoon sun. An insane idea, I rushed recklessly across Columbus Circle and into the park. I climbed a small hill above the pond at 60th Street from where I could see, standing in a silent row along the mall, 19 of those great metal titans, their cowls empty, their great steel arms hanging listlessly by their sides. I looked in vain for the monsters that inhabit those machines. Suddenly, my eyes were attracted to the immense flock of blackbirds that hovered directly below me. They circled to the ground, and there before my eyes, stark and silent, lay the Martians, with the hungry birds pecking and tearing brown shreds of flesh from their dead bodies. Later, when their bodies were examined in the laboratories, it was found that they were killed by the putrefaction and disease bacteria against which their systems were unprepared. Slain after all man's defenses had failed by the humblest thing that God and his wisdom put upon this earth. Before the cylinder fell, there was a general persuasion that through all the deep of space, no life existed beyond the petty surface of our minute sphere. Now we see further. Dim and wonderful is this vision I have conjured up in my mind of life spreading slowly from this little seedbed of the solar system throughout the inanimate vastness of sidereal space. But that is a remote dream. It may be that the destruction of the Martians is only a reprieve. To them, and not to us, is the future ordained, perhaps. Strange it now seems to sit in my peaceful study at Princeton, writing down this last chapter of the record begun at a deserted farm in Red Hawk. Strange to see from my window the university spires dim and blue through an April haze. Strange to watch children playing in the streets. Strange to see young people strolling on the green where the new spring grass heals itself from the last black scars of a bruised earth. Strange to watch the sightseers enter the museum where the dissembled parts of a Martian machine are kept on public view. Strange when I recall the time when I first saw it, bright and clean cut, hard and silent, under the dawn of the last great day.
I am Carrie from WTSQ's Out of Place, and this concludes our modern dramatization of H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. I would like to take a moment to thank all of the friends and the DJs that stepped in to help record this with Rick Skeen, Rob James, John Michael Early, Erica Simonak, Roger Young, Scotty Johnson, Seth DeStefano, Heather Johnson, Adam Harris, Josh Gaffin, Laura Reynolds, and Jamie Lee Davis.